Hi there. Welcome to episode number 20 of the NP Tech Projects podcast series. And episode number 20 is about donor data privacy. Where is it now and where it appears to be going? You might ask how it is that we continue to arrive back at the idea of ownership of data. In the past, we've talked about how you as an organization should own your data as it relates to places like Facebook pages and your website. In other words, we've made the assumption that the nonprofit owns the information about itself. But if that's true, then who owns the data about donors? A donor provides you with information as a result of solicitation so that you can send them emails to tell them about what your organization does, and you can solicit for donations to help keep you going. But are they relinquishing their data to do with as you wish, or are they loaning it to you to assist in your mission? We believe it's the latter, and therefore you have an obligation to both protect it and to ask before sharing it and to keep a donor advised as to where it is and who's controlling it. Before we discuss where we think this subject is going, let's talk about the as-is for a moment. There are only four places where donor information is kept: with the donor, as in they've never shared it; with you, as in you are maintaining the data on your equipment; with a third party, which you use to manage information and services, as in an internet service provider, a web host, and or software as a service provider; and with a donor advised fund. Statistics tell us that the majority of our listeners have taken the easy way to manage your donor information. We can address this most easily in describing the sequence of technologies that you use. First, your ISP, your internet service provider, controls your output of email in order to reduce spam. So you need an email marketing provider such as MailChimp or Constant Contact. They have your donor's name and email, as well as your prospects. Once sent, they also store individual open rates, who's opening the email, the email client and click rates for your shared links. If you take the social network package, they also match up your supporters' email address with their social networks. Second, donor management systems, for a fee, will make your life easier by managing your data. Your software as a service donor management system needs data in order to help. They need email addresses, the full name, relationships to other family donors, company names, mailing addresses, history of donations, amount of donations, relationship to your organization, such as a board member, a staff member, a volunteer, recipient of services, respondent to donor solicitation letters, attendees at events who donates, and all or any of the above. Where this is taking you and us are the current trends in the market.
Well, hello, everybody. So the trends of the market, the first development is that there's a consolidation of the software as a service donor management systems. Some donor management systems, bigger ones, buy up the smaller ones and become multi-million dollar businesses through merger and purchase. There is one link will show you the history of Blackboard, for instance, who bought up quite a few donor management systems. And another trend in the market is that predictive analysis, as well as artificial intelligence, makes their way in. The for-profit market demands more and more data about the consumers. And to serve consumers well in personalized services, targeted products. So when you search for a product online and you visit websites, sometimes you see the same company advertised on your browsing behavior throughout the internet, being at the Facebook or Google search or even a publisher who is part of the bigger advertising networks. And to track this all, they create cookies on your PC when you visit a commercial website, and the information is even present when you go to a different website. In certain areas. the nonprofit world has been known to actually share data with other nonprofits or other entities based on zip code and charity boards or club memberships. And then that information is matched up with additional data that is around, it's available for sale about, and we will talk later a little bit on the donor search part of it. That's one side of it. So the companies and nonprofits require additional information that is obtained through online tracking. There was a study by the FTC talking about online tracking, and they surveyed 100 websites and found that these 100 websites share information with 861 third-party services, tracking services. From those 800 third-party domains, also share information with additional 200 organizations. So there's a whole network of online tracking possible. So let's break it down a little bit. One example is Facebook. Facebook has and nonprofits use it quite a bit to boost posts in the newsfeed and then track who is clicking on it. And so you get conversion data out of it. You also will be able to add a so-called Facebook pixel to your website and advertise your website through Facebook. And then it follows that person around outside of the Facebook website. And it tracks all the movements around the website, so different kind of websites. And the next step is that they then show more targeted ads to that particular person. This happens, of course, in a big scale of things. A lot of consumers know that, and some of them are your donors. So they use ad blockers, they use incognito browsing, they use something like Mozilla Lightbeam. There's also a new browser just published a month ago called Firefox Focus Browser. And that will travel the internet or read, follow links from social networks on your mobile phone, eliminating the tracking on it. So, and you will be able to, and when you use it, you see in a little menu item, okay, 29 trackers not used or 18 trackers not used kind of thing. There is a way to opt out of that, but there's only a small set of those trackers are actually organized in the United States. A lot of them are outside of the United States. There's network advertising initiatives out there where many online advertising companies collect behavioral data of internet browsers, and you as a consumer would be able to opt out. There's also other things that are tracking, Google Analytics, for instance, social media, your cookies, and then web beacons, which connect social network sites with other sites across the internet without you providing sharing data kind of thing. So what's the trade-off is to talk about? When businesses do it, the trade-off is that you might get better service, that the advertising is more targeted, so it matches up your interest more. It also means that you buy more. But what is a trade-off for a nonprofit organization? And not so much the trade-off of the nonprofit. You get, as a nonprofit, you get more data and you can also target it more. But what's the trade-off for the donor? What do they get out of it? I think you have a hard time making a case that this tracking and sharing data and providing data with other organizations benefits your donor. And what do you think, Jim?
Well, let's use some concrete examples. Here's an example of a company that wants to sell you donor prospecting and analysis. The company's called Donor Search. And they have several databases that you can subscribe to and purchase. They have one that's on wealth screening. And the idea is to figure out the capacity and inclination of your current donors. They have an integrated search division that outlines virtually all of your prospects' important wealth and philanthropic information, including income, real estate, relationships with other nonprofits and publicly held companies, stock transactions, and more. They have something called Prospect View Online, which finds prospects and researches both traditional wealth markers and philanthropic activity, including wealth information that shows ability to give, philanthropic activity that shows past giving, and nonprofit affiliations. There's also another group called Gift Search that searches for all the gifts given by an individual, a couple, a foundation, or an organization. And a thing called Prospect Generator, which is a wealth screening tool, highlighting new prospects interested in your cause. Results include identified donors who have contributed to the researched area. In the healthcare field, there's something called a daily patient screening, which is, it's very valid. Establish relationships with your best prospects at the time they're most likely to be grateful when they're current patients. Send us the names of your patients and you'll have comprehensive philanthropic and wealth profiles waiting for you the next morning, including previous philanthropic activity, causes and generations supported, real estate ownership. This is just some of the things that we found under this one organization. And they advertise it and they sell it to you. The question is this, if they are using your donor information because you are subscribing to them, is this what your donors want you to be doing with their information? And again, it goes back to who owns the information about the donor. If they are just lending it to you, do they want to lend it to you for this kind of purpose? We've now sort of taken a peek at where this industry is going.
Just think about when you read through this on donor search, what I heard you multiple times saying was previous philanthropic activities, meaning at some point they are able to match up your donor's information with information from other organization that this person has also donated to. And it's quite interesting that everybody has these non-sharing clauses in their databases, and all of a sudden this information is, not all of a sudden, but that information is still out there and so immensely available that somebody is able to make a service out of that, to sell it to you as a nonprofit organization and match up the prospecting. It's similar to that. There's another company out there that is a full subsidiary of Blackbaud, and its name, I think it's Target Analysis. And that's the predictive analysis arm of a donor management system company that has bought up a lot of smaller donor management systems in the course of the last 10 years. And their wealth of data that they got with it certainly is a good foundation to have a multi-million-dollar company that does predictive analysis. Those are not cheap. But when that happens, do you think all the donors in there know that that happened? And that they actually got a letter from them that their data is now shared with something else? I doubt it.
Let's talk a little bit about what you may want to do about it and what steps you might take. And there are places here, and the first one is, you need to clearly discuss with your board what you would like your privacy policy to say, with the understanding that your privacy policy is directly connected with your IT strategy. For example, you may elect to keep all of your IT information closely controlled and not share it with a software as a service provider. Or you may do the opposite. You may elect to provide it to a software with a service provider or software as a service provider, in which case your board needs to know exactly what that provider's policy is for as it relates to your donors. Secondly, you need to find a way to discuss with your donors what your privacy policy is, with a caveat about why we do it, why we take this route. But we don't want to leave you standing all alone with this, so we've got some standards which you can incorporate into your practices and discussions. In the past, we've discussed the Donor Bill of Rights as published by the Association of Fundraising Professionals. And you might want to see our blog post where we've also published a lesser-known Donor E-Bill of Rights, again, as provided by the Association of Fundraising Professionals. However, it was done in 1993. As far as we know, it has not been updated. If it has, we don't know where it is. What are others doing to protect privacy? The EU is a great example.
We have a link in our show notes to an article. It's actually dated in 2014. So the Non-Profit Times talks about donor privacy in connection with activities at the European Union level, where charities across the pond were panicking because the changes would include making opt-in consent mandatory for telemarketing and direct mail, and banning the tracking of IP addresses and the deletion of email users who have opt out. The proposed changes would go into effect this year. And Andy Taylor, a consultant in the UK, posits that requiring an opt-in for telemarketing and direct mail, as well as email or SMS, or text messaging, could result in a loss of up to 50% in numbers for third-party list rental services. But how does it look from the donor's point of view, we ask? And then any company will need to ask the implicit consumer consent to collect and use data across the web and app ecosystem in the European Union. The General Data Protection Regulation is coming into effect in 2018. But also in the US, more and more individuals are paying attention to how the data is tracked and how it is stored. The increased number of people who use ad blockers, use incognito browsing, use the new browser on the mobile Android and iOS for Firefox Focus. It also raises the trust issues that your donors might have with current practices. We look through nonprofits' privacy policies, and here are a few examples. DonorsChoose.org is a large nonprofit, and they write, for instance, in their privacy policy, DonorsChoose.org employees, volunteers, interns, and contractors must have a legitimate business reason to access personal information of their donors. Following the industry best practices, agents must log in with a two-factor authentication and take steps in limiting the amount of access to the minimum level that outside agents actually would have to the information. So that's a good practice to say, okay, who in our organization has access to what kind of data?
We've also surveyed and tried to research several larger organizations about their communications and privacy policies, one of which we've decided not to bring up today. Not that it's not very good, but IBM has a very extensive privacy policy that extends to a variety of their activities. But one of the ones that we particularly like is the National Geographic Society, and they have several things where they give a commitment to the donor. If you register for a service to become a member and receive a newsletter, you may be asked for your name, email address, mailing address, phone numbers, and other information. If you order a product from us, you may be asked for that same information plus your credit card number. If you are ordering a product as a gift for another person, you may be asked for that person's name, postal address, and phone number in order for us to deliver the gift. If you participate in an activity such as a survey or sweepstakes, you may be asked for your name, email address, and birth date, which as a parenthetically is to prove that you're eligible to receive the prize, and also to provide other types of information such as gender and personal interests, which we've obtained from you or that you're willing to provide to us. However, there's other data that they also discuss, which is relative to your presence on the internet. For example, they may collect your IP address, which identifies the computer or service provider that you use to access the services, or information about your browser type, authentication identifiers, and other software information. N10 is another organization with an extensive privacy policy.
What I like on the N10 privacy policy is they follow the same way what activities that they list, and then what information they collect and what they do with that information. And they actually start with the IP address, or one of the early ones in that list is what information do we collect. So even as a non-donor or non-supporter comes to their website, have the IP address as well as the how you visit the websites in form of cookies. And then they list very explicitly what they do with the information in the membership directory for the nonprofit technology conference. And they also list in their privacy policy the security on their website and their commitment to protecting your privacy. What I liked on the National Geographic Society privacy policy also is that they list actually third-party tools. And we used their example, where we also did it on our website and MPTech project, is that we also let you know which tool we use that acts on our behalf. Like when you subscribe to our e-news, we use MailChimp, then you are in control of your information and you know what happens with it.
Another one that we found that is very clearly written, which is probably why I like it as much as I do, is the Colon Cancer Alliance. And by the way, there are links to all of these in our show notes for you. But they break it down to three things: what information we collect from you and how we use that information, how we protect your information, and questions that you might have about the privacy policy.
Yeah, so we have four organizations' privacy policy: the DonorsChoose.org, the National Geographic Society, the Nonprofit Technology Network, and the Colon Cancer Alliance. Those privacy policies are a clear blueprint where you can start creating your own. I got into this privacy issue when I was following Jeff Jarvis, who is a professor of journalism at City University of New York. And he writes, the issue is not privacy per se, it's control, or we have a right to control the information and how it's used. And if you approach it from your donor privacy stewardship, from that point of view, it kind of leads you the way on how your technology decisions are also made, as well as what you can do to technically protect your donor privacy. So in order not to violate the right of your donors, you need to be transparent in what you collect about them, what you do with the data, and give each donor a way to opt out. Now, the last part, I think we all have to work on that. You can hold your data much closer to your organization and study the market, what technology is available. You may use self-hosted open source software like CVCRM for all your communication and data management, or you don't use a third-party software to collect donations on your website. You could use, if it's on WordPress, for instance, WordPress plugins that are installed on your website and the data stays with you and does not go outside the organization. So that's what I have right now. We went from, there's a whole lot of tracking going on, to organizations being more transparent what data they collect and what they do with it, to what software can we use to not fringe upon other people's privacy.
One of the things that we think is the overriding principle is who owns the data, to go back to where we started. The data on a donor is owned by the donor. The donor is loaning it to you in order to help you accomplish your mission. If you consider that fact and consistently use it, that this is loaned information, then you have an obligation to tell the loaner where the information is, how it's used, and how you protect it. And we think that's perhaps the overarching guideline to what we want to say. This field is growing so rapidly. Just preparing for today's podcast, I must have learned four or five things I had no idea was going on, such as online email tracking by way of cookies and things like that, that I had just never come across. Well, now you've come across them too, so we're sharing the pain. But I think it'll help you to help your donors. And I truly believe that it will help you in making your donors part of your organization so that they feel more inclined to believe in what you're doing because of the way you're protecting them. And that's about all I've got to say for today. So thank you for listening. Any questions, comments, or criticisms, please feel free to forward them to the website. We're happy to publish them in order to get a conversation going. If you prefer them to be treated privately, we're happy to do that and respect your privacy as well. That's all from me for today.
Topic is so deep. When we discussed it over the last 2 months, we got in all kind of different avenues down the road. We are not at the end of it yet. We just scratched the surface of things that are come in terms of artificial intelligence. There is already an email service out there that does automation per artificial intelligence, which kind of is personalization and email through artificial intelligence. I think there's an oxymoron somewhere. But that's it for now. As always, our show notes are on npitechprojects.org/podcast. This is the episode 20. And if you want to send us emails, send us an email to podcast@npitechprojects.org or leave your comment in the comment section on our website. Thank you so much for listening, and until the next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.